Committee on Commerce and Consumer Protection will come to order on Wednesday, May 4th, 2011. The first bill on the agenda is, actually both bills on the agenda today are with Senator Thompson. Now, we don't have a quorum quite yet, but as soon as we do, I'll announce that. But why don't you go ahead and begin, Senator Thompson, with your presentation of Senate File 1125.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. Do you have a preference on which one I take first?
I think 1125 is what we want.
1125 is first on the agenda. All right. Very good. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. And I do have an amendment, but I will obviously wait to offer that until you have a quorum. So we'll go ahead and start up with the gist of the bill.
So, Senator Thompson, we're going to go ahead and hand out the A1 amendment so everybody has it at their places. And you're correct. We'll take action when that comes in. But you'll be speaking to the A1 amendment. Is that a page and line? No, it's not.
Page and line.
It is page and line. Okay. Well, then you'll be speaking to the bill as if it was amended, correct?
That is correct. Thank you, okay. Mr. Chairman. I'm joined here at the table by Mr. Pete Thrain, who will help explain the bill. Once I have completed my explanation, then, of course, either of us will be happy to take questions from you. Most of you are familiar with the idea that when you go in to buy an electronics device, whether it's a smartphone or an iPod or whatever it may be, you have the opportunity to put an insurance policy on that. And generally, you have some modest payment, like $6 or $7 a month, that will cover you for various problems that you have. And in some cases, it might even be you accidentally just destroy the device, it gets replaced. And last year, a change was made in our law because theoretically, if you were to adhere to the letter of the law, in order for a sales clerk at a retail establishment to quote-unquote sell one of those warranties would have required an insurance license. And that was changed by statute last year. Now, this bill addresses the other side of it, which is when there is a claim. So say, for example, I were to buy a smartphone and were to have some kind of a problem and I had one of these warranties, I obviously need to take some action to get the phone repaired or replaced. And typically, you would either call a toll-free number or, frankly, nowadays, you can go online. And oftentimes, it's as simple as just plugging in information. Well, as things currently stand, if I were to get on the telephone and make a call to a service center to try to make good on my warranty, the individual that I speak with would need to be property and casualty insurance licensed. And it's the belief of the industry, and it's my belief that that's an unreasonable burden because, as I indicated earlier, that can actually now be done online so that I would be able to, you know, log into whatever it would be, Sprint.com or Verizon or maybe some website from the actual underwriter of the insurance, fill in my information, verify the fact that I have the insurance, plug in the information relating to why I'm making a claim, and it could literally get done online. This is nothing that requires judgment. So what this bill does in its essence is that the primary function, Mr. Chairman and members, is to change the law so that if you have one of these service centers, where for the most part all you have are people who are gathering information, verifying information, not making any judgments whatsoever. It's not like, for example, many of us have had our homes examined by an adjuster for hail damage on the roof, where there's a lot of judgment involved. Does this look like hail damage? When did it occur? What's the extent of the damage? That's not what this is. This is simply I'm Dave Thompson. Here's the phone that I bought. Here's the serial number. Here's how it's not functioning. End of story. It's very much a clerical function. And so this law, or this bill, excuse me, if it were passed into law, would simply change things so that only one out of 25 people that do that sort of thing in any one particular office would have to be insurance licensed. So we maintain a presence within the organization of somebody who is properly licensed by the state to adjust property and casualty claims, but you could have a number of people that are not licensed and not and have not met the requirements of the state to get a property and casualty license. And given this really is a clerical function, that certainly makes some sense. Now, with respect to the amendment, I will speak to that. It really does three things. If you look at the original bill, which I assume members have the original bill in front of them, and you look at what is labeled Subdivision 23, there's a number 3 down there that says must be certified as compliant with this section by a licensed independent adjuster that is an officer of a business entity licensed under this chapter. Mr. Thrain can testify to the fact that that actually has been removed at the request of the department, because the department, this would trigger a requirement that they oversee the people referred to in number three. The department has asked that that be removed, and the advocates of the bill have agreed to that, and I'm fine with that too. The second change, Mr. Chairman and members, made by the amendment is, if you go to the original bill under subdivision 4 on page 2, which is lines 3.9 through 3.15, you'll see a some specific language dealing with people who are residents of Canada. And once again, this was at the request of the department. This has been changed into some language that has been accepted, I believe, in Louisiana, did you
Correct.
Say? And so this, again, is language that was changed at the request of the department, and there is agreement on that. I'm not suggesting the department agrees with the bill. They will have to speak to that if they choose, but that is language that was added at the request of the department. And then the final change made by the amendment is, if you go to the original bill, back to page 4, starting at line 9, there's a reference to a business entity, and what the amendment does is it makes it clear that this whole section, starting or whole group of provisions, I should say, starting at line 4.9 and going through 4.27, that it applies only to portable electronics rather than all businesses. And once again, that was at the request of the department to narrow the scope of the application of the statute so that it's clear we're targeting the kinds of transactions I've discussed. So in summary, changing the law so that only one out of 25 people in any one of these adjusting areas needs to be insurance licensed. Secondly, getting the language pertaining to Canadian residents in compliance with what the department would like. And then finally, the last component is making sure the language limits this to the area of portable electronics. And Mr. Chairman, I will at that, at your pleasure, if you'd like to have me take questions now, I'll do that. Otherwise, Mr. Thrain can speak to the bill in more detail and then be open for any questions that you have.
Okay. Senator Thompson, first a couple of business items. We do have a quorum present, so we can take action. I think at this time, first what we'd like to do is let's go ahead and adopt that A1 amendment. So those members who just came in, we've been discussing amendments that we have not adopted yet. It's an author's amendment, the A1, to the Senate file we're dealing with right now, which is Senate file 1125, the first item on your agenda. And so Senator Thompson would move the adoption of his author's amendment, the A1 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say no. And the motion prevails, and the A1 amendment is adopted. So we've adopted the A1 amendment. And then, members, do you have any questions for Senator Thompson's opening remarks? Yes, Senator Bonoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Thompson, there's a couple things that just aren't clear to me in the bill. If you look at line 3.4 in the bill itself.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Where it says where no more than 25 such persons are under the supervision of one licensed independent adjuster or licensed insurance producer who is exempt from licensure under Clause 12. Can you explain to me why they're exempt from licensure under Clause 12 and what's the significance of that exemption?
Mr. Chair and Senator Bonoff, I think I will defer that question to Mr. Thrain. If you would identify yourself for the record and address Senator Bonoff's question, I'd appreciate that.
Mr. Thrain.
Mr. Chairman and members, my name is Peter Thrain from Leonard Street and Dynard on behalf of Assurian Protective, who is one of the nation's largest writers of mobile telephone insurance. Senator Bonoff, with respect to your question, the current adjuster licensing law exempts licensed producers. Consequently, a licensed insurance agent does not also need to carry an adjuster license. And so what that provision says is the person could either be licensed as a producer or licensed as an adjuster to fulfill the supervisory function.
Thank you. One more question.
Senator Bonoff.
Senator Thompson, and if you can't answer it, you're a witness, but can you explain why on lines 4.9 through 4.14. Why is this language needed? What is the reason why we're putting into law this thing about the Social Security numbers, criminal administrative history, background checks? Why is this area, you know, of that kind of sensitivity that we would require that in law?
Senator Thompson.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bonhoff, we view that as an additional consumer protection. What it says is that the business entity that was licensed as an adjuster, in this case my client, would be licensed as an adjuster, would be subject to the background checks that are currently required for natural person adjusters. Today, under Minnesota law, a natural person that applies to be an adjuster must go through a background check. A business entity does not. To the extent that we are now focusing a little more regulation on the business entity in this context, we felt it was an additional measure of consumer protection to provide that background check for the business entity in addition to the natural person. And again, as Senator Thompson's amendment limits that business entity background check to adjusters of portable electronics insurance, so it's narrowly tailored to the folks of the bill.
Senator Bonhoff.
Mr. Chair, again, I guess I'm still just wanting to understand what the significance is of selling portable electronics or insuring portable electronics such that we would require this level of scrutiny, and is there a fiscal note associated with it? Somebody has to be the receiver of this information and make sure that it's accurate.
Senator Thompson.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, Senator Bonhoff, with respect to why we're doing it, we want to make sure that that individual or entity that does oversee this up to 25 people meets the normal disclosure and scrutiny requirements that anyone in the insurance field would normally need to meet. So I don't believe, and Mr. Thrain, you can correct me if I'm wrong, I don't believe that this goes beyond the information normally required. We're just applying that to the entity that would oversee this group of people who now would not have to be licensed adjusters. Mr. Thrain, is that accurate?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Thompson, that is correct.
Okay, Senator Thompson, I have a question. Is there a technical or legal difference between the term warranty and the term, insurance? Is there a difference on that? And warranties, are those generally included with the price of a product? And is the insurance on top of that? Or what is the difference between a product warranty and this type of insurance you're talking about?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Thrain might be able to speak more specifically to the product that we're talking about. But as a general legal concept, everything you buy comes with a warranty of merchantability, which is an implied in law warranty that you are getting what the seller purports to be selling you. And so these are warranties that are written, that kind of go beyond that. But you may want to define that more clearly in the context of this product.
Mr. Chairman and Member Senator Thompson, correct. A warranty is a coverage that deals with defects in workmanship and labor. Consequently, if there's some, with respect of your phone, the manufacturer may provide a warranty that's regulated under federal law that says that if it breaks or needs repair due to just sort of ordinary a defect in workmanship, that's a warranty. If there is a casualty loss, that is that something beyond the control of the manufacturer, it breaks, it drops, it's lost, there's a property loss, that's insurance, and that's covered by insurance. And so in this case, portable electronics insurance covers sort of damage or loss or breakage of the phone. Okay, the warranty covers a defect in workmanship to the phone itself. Now, under Chapter 59B, we also regulate a product called an extended warranty. So in addition to buying portable electronics insurance, a person can also buy a warranty that extends the manufacturer's warranty, and that warranty is regulated under Chapter 59B of Minnesota law.
Okay, thank you. Let me ask one other question. Maybe Mr. Thrain can answer this. So under current law, everybody at this call center is required to have an insurance license. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, under current law, it's not entirely clear. There are some exemptions in the law. They don't apply to this circumstance. In order to clarify law to make it clear that the natural persons at the call center wouldn't require to be licensed, that's the purpose of the bill, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, I'm just wondering, what are they currently, if that is a bar that is very high to meet, and that's what you're trying to bring some balance into this, or some rational balance into this, sounds like what you're trying to do. What are they doing now? If I called up a call center right now, would that person, I mean, under current law, if they're supposed to have a license, would they?
Mr. Chairman and members, we would argue that that person would not need to be licensed under a clerical exemption, provided one of the 13 licensing exemptions.
Okay.
Our client would appreciate clarity, because the law certainly wasn't drafted at a time that contemplated this kind of a product and this kind of a process. And the purpose of this law, then, is to provide that clarity, to make clear what is a regulated and what's not a regulated activity.
Okay. Further questions from the committee members? And if not, then, Mr. Thrana, you probably had some testimony, because we didn't get that. We just jumped right into some questions, and I don't want to cut you off. Did you want to make some other remarks in general to the bill?
Mr. Chairman, no, I thought Senator Thompson's remarks were excellent, and I would have nothing further to add.
Okay. Senator Bonoff.
One last question. Nobody addressed whether or not there would be a fiscal note to the Commerce Department.
Well, and I think we're going to hear from the Commerce Department as well, I think. I'm not sure, but we can have them come up. Senator Thompson.
We can certainly have that addressed, Mr. Chairman and Senator Bonoff. I would think, if anything, this would decrease costs to the government, because under the current structure, there's a possibility some businesses might determine they feel they got to have all their people insurance licensed, which incurs some cost for the state. Mr. Thrain did mention to me he did have one more point he wanted to make.
Well, Mr. Chairman, members, I do want to make one more point. With respect, we have worked closely with the Department of Commerce about this over the last 3 or 4 months. We've had a number of meetings. The amendment that is before you today was designed to address their concerns. You know, I don't know that they are in support of the bill. I don't know that they've sort of agreed to each and every word, but we've attempted over the course of these months to address their concern. In my understanding, they're going to testify. And I just want to clarify that I don't want them the suggestion that this is their exact language.
Okay. Senator Thompson, do you have any other testifiers?
I do not. This is my only testifier, so
well, then let's ask if there's anybody in the audience that would like to speak on the bill. And please identify yourselves and whether you are for or against the bill or in between.
Hi. Good to see you. How are you?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. John Rank from the Department of Commerce. It's true, we've been working with Mr. Thrain and others over the last couple of months to work through this issue, and certainly appreciate the strides they've taken to address some of our concerns. At this point, Mr. Chair, we simply just have a difference of opinion as to whether there's a need for the bill. Under current law, the department feels that the folks who would be doing these adjusters are staff adjusters and therefore are exempt from the law, and so we feel that current practice allows them to do this, and so the difference of opinion lies with whether or not we need the bill at all. I understand that the industry would like clarity, and I can appreciate that, but we think that under current law everything is just fine, and we would say that we probably don't need the bill. The heartburn that some folks at the department also have is that we would be sort of blessing an electronic adjustment process, and Mr. Thrain talked about that a little bit ago about whether or not at some point, you know, PNC claims for homeowner hail damage or something will be adjusted by a computer. I'm not sure we'll ever get there, but one thing that we are concerned about is sort of the slippery slope of having an electronic adjustment system as opposed to a person doing it. And that is the one issue that we have in addition to the exemption. Currently, we consider the folks that do this exempt, and so this would create an exemption for folks that we think are already exempt. And we consider them staff adjusters, Mr. Chair, which means an adjuster who is a salaried employee of an insurance company or an affiliate of an insurance company who is engaged in adjusting insured losses solely for that company or other companies under common control or ownership. And we would consider Assurian and others to be an affiliate of an insurance company, and therefore those folks would be staff adjusters. And those are our concerns, Mr. Chair. Certainly do appreciate the strides that have been taken to mitigate our other concerns with respect to Canada. And
Senator Thompson, you want to respond?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I would just point out that, you know, if the argument, it seems there's been a twofold argument made. One is we don't need the law, and the second is we might start down the slippery slope. With respect to we don't need the law, it seems to me that if we're not changing the law, that in no way harms the department or their position, and will create clarity, certainty for business, which is a good positive thing in the business environment we currently live. Secondly, with respect to the slippery slope argument, what we as policymakers do all the time is draw lines. And I think all of us can see the difference between someone filling in data about the facts pertaining to my phone and adjusting an automobile claim where someone's been had a vehicle damaged and or people injured or on a roof. And I would also point out that for those kinds of claims where judgment is involved, the insurance company has every bit as much interest is in having a person involved as does the claimant. No insurance company would want to provide a $10,000, $20,000 roof on a home based on a computer claim or a claim over the phone. So this bill is not about substituting computers or telephone calls for adjusters where judgment is involved. This is simply about allowing a clerk or someone qualified as in a clerk capacity to do the work of a clerk. That's what this is about.
Mr. Wright, has there been any enforcement actions to date that you're aware of on anybody that that we're dealing with here that this bill is relating to? Has there been any enforcement actions?
Mr. Chair, no.
There's not. Okay. So, Senator Thompson, I get where your client or the people you're representing and Mr. Thrain's client, it sounds like they're saying that they believe these people are exempt. The department's saying they're exempt, but yet I understand businesses desire to have clarity. Business does not like uncertainty. They do not like to have any potential things hanging out there because you never know when administration folks or enforcement officials change over and these sorts of things. I know this happened a number of years ago. I had to carry a wine tasting bill because the enforcement actions within the Department of Public Safety had been static for many years. Well, then they changed enforcement officers. It was about a decade ago, and then someone said, aha, they've dusted off something and said, well, this is how we're going to interpret this, and then they changed it. Suddenly that created a problem when it previously everybody had agreed that everything was okay. So it was kind of a similar situation that I'm seeing. So I certainly understand their desire for clarity on this. Members, any other discussion? Senator Pappas.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I kind of think this is a solution looking for a problem. And, we have enough problems without trying to dig them out and, anticipate there might be a problem in the future, so therefore we need to do this now. So I kind of think it's unnecessary.
Other discussion from other members? Okay. Senator Thompson, I'm not positive about that, but I think I'm going to vote for the bill, and my overriding, I think, judgment is that because if folks feel it's unclear, and this just simply adds clarification, it doesn't alter the way the enforcement's being done now, but will going forward, that it seems like it'll add some stability to the industry and some clarity. You've won me over on the balance on that one. That would be my take on it. Any members have anything else to say or to offer up? Senator Bonoff.
Mr. Chair, I was hoping somebody else would ask the question, but because I didn't want to ask all the questions.
Well, I asked a few, Senator Bonoff.
Thank you. Senator Thompson, has there been any response in support or opposition to your picking the 25 number? I mean, where did you decide that 25 was the magic number?
Mr. Thrain, if you can address the rationale behind that number, because quite frankly, Mr. Chair and Senator Bonoff, I don't know why that's the right number.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bonoff, Peter Thrain with Leonard Street and Dinard on behalf of Assurian. The number has obviously some level of arbitrariness to it, and it was selected as a reasonable number. I will say to you, though, that it is a number that is in place now and has been enacted in two states with legislation moving to enactment across the country and up to 16 states. So it's a concept that has some traction in other states, and I think the view has been that it's a reasonable number to provide for a reasonable number to provide that sort of scope of supervision.
Senator Bonner.
Mr. Chair, is that common practice that we would put in law a number with regard to appropriate, you know, scope of supervisory accountability? Is there other areas where we've done that before?
Senator Bonner, I can't think of, I mean, I know there are examples. I've seen them over the years. Off the top of my head, I couldn't point you to a particular reference where we do. A lot of it is, I know that we had numerous bills in the previous session, Senator Metzen's committee on business, industry, and jobs. Mm-hmm. There were many labor issues about supervisory, you know, whether a journeyman pipe fitter and so many apprentices, and what the ratios were, and supervisory for all those purposes. What was an appropriate scope of supervision that is appropriate? I know we do that a lot in labor issues. So,
well, Mr. Chair, it just seems to me that you could have a situation where you'd want 100 people in a call center, and you might, you know, and then to have four. You know, that have that license does seem arbitrary to me.
Senator Thompson?
Mr. Chairman, in terms of specific numbers like that, Senator Bonoff, the only example I can think of is, for example, some laws that govern employment regulations, such as Americans with Disabilities Act, applies to employers that employ only over a certain number of people. That is sometimes to confer federal jurisdiction, those kinds of things. I think what we're looking at here is kind of a common sense notion that, I mean, I guess we could say nobody had to be insurance licensed to do this, but I think from a consumer protection standpoint, the idea is we do want somebody overseeing the process that understands the rules and regulations pertaining to adjustment of claims. And I think you're exactly right. Is 25 the magic number? 32? 71? Who knows? But I think we want to find that balance between not bringing extraordinary costs to bear on this process, but yet it certainly seems reasonable that when, in its essence, it is kind of an insurance function, that for every so many people, there's somebody there that is bound by the rules and regulations that our insurance regulators provide. But I think you're right. The exact number is somewhat arbitrary. I agree with that. But if we don't pick enough, we're stuck with one extreme or the other, really. Either everybody has to be an adjuster or we have no guideline at all. So, I mean, the very nature of the legislation is kind of picking a number, I think.
Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Thompson, Senator Bonoff. I think you're right, but if the industry wants to go with 25, that's actually more accountability, so I say let's do 25.
Okay, then see no further discussion. Nobody else, anybody else from the audience? I should do one last call. Seeing none, then Senator Thompson moves that Senate File 1125 as amended be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Judiciary and Public Safety. All those in favor, good luck there. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, say no.
No.
And the motion prevails, and Senate File 1125 as amended is recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Judiciary and Public Safety.
Mr. Chairman, nothing personal against Senator Limmer, but I assume that there is a reason this needs to go to Judiciary?
They have requested it.
Data privacy?
Oh, because of data privacy issues. That would make sense.
I tried.
Right. That's why they requested it. Senator Thompson, you have another bill before us, Senate File 1268.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. And members, I first want to get started by saying that those of you who have heard about this bill or looked at it may have heard of it as a payday loan bill. That is an absolute misnomer. In fact, it is the antithesis to a payday loan. It applies to collateralized loans that are not payday loans. And I could certainly have Mr. Cassidy, who will be talking here shortly, explain that to you. This bill, while in a somewhat complex area of law, which is secured transactions, is actually a relatively simple bill. Let's say that one of you members wanted to go and get a short-term loan. You needed it for whatever the case may be. You were short on cash for whatever reason. And perhaps you didn't want to go to the effort of filling out a full application, proving your financial stability or whatever, but you could find someone that would provide you cash in exchange for commitment of an asset. So let's say that you owned a boat worth $2,500, and you could find someone that would give you, say, $2,000 and simply keep possession of your boat, file a statement to get a security interest against that boat, and if you don't pay the loan off, then would be able to sell your boat and recover their money. But they do not have a right to sue you personally. The only thing they have is the boat. If they make a misjudgment on the value of the boat, they may take a bath on it. That's called, in legal parlance, a collateralized non-recourse loan. And what that means is I've provided collateral. I've handed over my $2,500 boat in exchange for the $2,000 loan. And we call it non-recourse because if I don't pay you, you're stuck with the boat. You can get whatever value you want out of the boat, but you can't come and sue me personally. And that's the kind of loans we're talking here. So the only asset put at risk is that asset that you hand over to the lender. And what we have is a situation where in Minnesota, there is a provision currently in law that allows these lenders to obtain a rate of interest, but does not allow them to collect the costs associated with keeping that asset. In the case of a boat, you might want it inside. You might want it in a Quonset or a warehouse of some kind, not subjected to the elements. And the same may be true for various other kinds of assets. There will be some cost incurred by the lender for holding on to the collateral. Frankly, I was brought the bill with a very broad, open-ended requirement that they could charge, the lender could charge almost any fee. I wasn't comfortable with that. I didn't think the members would be comfortable with that, and I felt that it needed to be restricted a little bit. So it actually did end up being restricted. And now we have a situation where I believe it's clear that this applies first and foremost to anything but these payday loans. We're not attempting to get people to get charged extra storage fees and that sort of thing for the payday loans, which is, you know, the kind of loan where I'm getting paid on Friday, but I need cash on Tuesday, so I go and take a three-day loan. Doesn't apply to that. That is a specific exception that is granted. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I would like to first off move the A2 author's amendment, which changes the language to conform with the intent of the author, and I would move that the A2 amendment at this time, which clarifies the definitions of the kinds of loans this applies to.
Okay, Senator Thompson, we're handing the A2 amendment out right now.
And what this does, again, in summary, is it clarifies that this does not apply to payday loans. Members, you will see it says, except on an unsecured loan transaction that is either a consumer small loan as defined in, and it goes on, and those are the consumer loans. Then also in the amendment, the A2 amendment line 1.7 clarifies the kinds, 1.7 to 1.9 clarifies the kinds of fees that can be collected, so it's not completely open-ended. So with that, Mr. Chairman, if members have had an opportunity to see it, I would once again move the A2 amendment.
Okay, Senator Thompson moves the author's amendment, the A2. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed say no. And the motion prevails. The A2 amendment is adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Thompson, if I could, just to clarify here, your bill, your three-page bill really is just essentially almost entirely just a reprinting of the section of statute, but, and you're only dealing with these couple of lines, and you've just replaced it with this. So this is essentially pretty much a delete everything, essentially, even though it's a page and line, right? I mean, we're
yes.
Really just working off this language at this point.
It is pretty much a delete everything that we had changed in the original bill. You are correct.
Okay. All right. So, Senator Thompson, do you have other testifiers?
I have one gentleman that would like to speak. Mr. Paul Cassidy can add to this. But in summary, to be clear, non-recourse collateralized loans, all this bill does is allow the lender to collect the reasonable fees of handling the collateral in addition to a rate of interest that, of course, is regulated by state and federal usury laws. And with that, I'll turn it over to Mr. Cassidy.
Mr. Cassidy, welcome.
Mr. Chairman, Paul Cassidy from Leonard Street and Dinard on behalf of the Rixman Companies. I really don't have a lot more to add. Senator Thompson did an excellent job at presenting the bill. I would like to highlight that this applies to regulated lenders and industrial loan and thrift lenders that are regulated under Minnesota Statutes 4760. And, of course, the Commerce Department has authority over those entities. Senator Thompson did point out, and I'd like to point out again, that our change that we're looking for is obviously for a lender to that needs to secure oftentimes very valuable collateral. Allows them to collect storage fees, maintenance fees, security charges, things like that. These collateralized items hopefully are always returned to the borrower, and they can't be put out in the back 40. They need to be put in a secure location and taken care of during the time that they're collateralized. With that, I'd be more than happy to answer any questions.
Questions for Mr. Cassidy? Okay, Senator Thompson, do you have any other testifiers?
I do not, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, then I think Mr. Elwood would like to offer up some comments to the committee. Welcome, Mr. Elwood. I think this is your first time this year before the Commerce Committee.
It is, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
I bring them out, don't I?
I'm glad we didn't let the year go by.
You've always been gracious to me, Mr. Chair. I was really trying to do my best not to darken your door this year, but...
Not at all. You wouldn't have at all. So go ahead and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, Ron Elwood with Legal Aid. First of all, I want to let folks know that I have shared some concerns with Senator Thompson and... I appreciate his openness. Members, just want you to know here what we're actually voting on and what the bill is. The changes here that are being sought are really for a very narrow, singular, specific transaction needed by one company, Pawn America. But the placement of the language is in Section 4759, which affects every kind of loan made by every kind of financial institution, finance companies, banks, industrial loans, and thrifts. So in our view, this is breathtakingly broad and a sweeping proposal that's really not needed, in our view, to satisfy the concerns of Pawn America to obtain more fees for this very specific type of loan that they're making. I mean, in our view, it's the proverbial elephant gun being used to shoot the flea. You know, in legal parlance, as you said, this is a collateralized non-recourse loan. In common parlance, it's a pawn transaction. And so as such... you know, I think the reason that it's being put into this section is because the restrictions that exist currently in the pawn shop law that wouldn't allow for these fees. So our solution is, rather than overturn these banking statutes, let's instead carve out the exceptions in the pawn shop law that would provide the additional fees necessary. And I do appreciate the narrowing already, though, although I would point out there's an awful lot of fees here: transporting, storing, securing, insuring, maintaining the collateral, fees for application, underwriting, processing, and service fees. It's a lot of fees. But, you know, we have provided the senator and the proponents with a proposal to place this into the pawn shop statutes that... I'd be happy to, if anybody's interested. I brought copies, but and that's what we have. So we'd be happy to work with the proponents and the author, and maybe they can achieve their goals in a different way that doesn't affect every financial institution in the state.
If you, hold on, because it's a question for you, Mr. Elwood. I have a couple of questions. The first one is, let's go directly to that point. Maybe Senator Thompson, if you can address that about the breadth of the bill, and I mean, it struck me immediately as I understand Mr. Elwood's desire to narrow or to have it apply just to the strict transaction here, but shouldn't a broader institution be allowed to charge for these storage of collateral, et cetera, as well? I guess I don't understand why. What would be the difference there? And maybe Mr. L wants to respond, and then also anybody else at the table on the scope of the bill.
Well, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
You sure?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Mr. L, go ahead.
Sure. Mr. Chair, members, I mean, my response to that is none of the other institutions that are affected here are coming here to ask you for this. It's only one company in the state that's asking you. So why would we do that if they're not really interested in doing this kind of stuff? It's a pawn transaction.
Right, Senator Thompson.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I can speak to that as a legislator. I don't make it a habit to address issues for a specific business or group of businesses. I think that legislation, if it's proper, should have broader application, and we shouldn't be looking at benefiting one individual company or one individual player within the marketplace unless there's some rational reason to do so. And then also, let's not forget, members, that when we talk about these collateralized non-recourse loans, that right there really limits the universe. For example, a mortgage is not a collateralized non-recourse loan. It's a collateralized recourse loan with specific provisions in law pertaining to that. So, you know, it's true that this is kind of broad, but realistically, given the nature of the loan that it applies to, it's fairly uncommon. And Senator Gerlach, Mr. Chairman, to your point, I think is a good one, that even if you assume that this has very, very broad application, what's the problem with the notion that if a financial institution is willing to give someone this type of loan, which I would point out to members, bears a fair amount of risk, because if your asset, if you've incorrectly appraised it and it's insufficient, you maybe miscalculated its resale value, the speed with which you can resell it, you're taking on some risk. Why shouldn't you at least be able to incur the or recoup the costs that are associated with your decision to bear those kinds of risks? And Mr. Cassidy perhaps has something to add to that.
Mr. Cassidy?
Mr. Chairman, getting back to Mr. Elwood's testimony, I guess what I would say as it relates to the pawn transactions is already in Minnesota statutes, under the pawn statutes, you can charge reasonable storage and service fees. A lot of people don't like to do pawn transactions. They don't like to visit pawn stores. This is a product that was created so that folks could take out a loan, a non-recourse collateralized loan that probably does look a lot like a pawn transaction, and allow the lender to impose those additional service fees on that transaction. So yes, this is addressed already in the pawn statute, but we're talking about the industrial loan and thrift portion of Minnesota statutes and the ability to impose these fees on the same type of transaction.
Yeah. Mr. Elwood?
Mr. Chair and members, a couple of things. First of all, you know, they could call it whatever they want. I mean, they could call it a loan, they could call it a duck, they could call it anything they'd like. Doesn't matter where the statute regulates it. I mean, we could have it in the pawn. It could be regulated under the pawn shop transaction, pawn shop law, and the customer would never know that. They can market it and sell it and deliver it in any form they like, but it's a question from a legal standpoint, where is it regulated? And to Senator Thompson's point, if it is such a narrow transaction to begin with, then why don't we place it where it belongs? And one of the other rationales for keeping it there is, well, what happens if we, for example, take somebody's car? We have some restrictions under the pawn shop law about title lending.
We're taking them out of it.
If we put this into Chapter 47, would that perhaps be a way to evade the auto title provisions? So I think this just raises so many questions, and it opens up so many potentially unintended consequences. And if it quacks like a duck, we ought to keep it where it belongs, make it a duck.
Senator Vanderveer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess my question is, when you talk about these non-recourse loans, do they affect the credit rating of somebody who, if they don't pay them back? in the case of a pond transaction, would they or?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Vandeveer, Mr. Cassidy says they don't. I was going to say I don't know for a fact, but I would doubt it because essentially when you enter into that kind of a loan, you have agreed that you haven't defaulted if I get to keep your asset in lieu of payment. And so it really isn't a credit kind of transaction. Is that accurate?
Mr. Chair and
Senator Vandeveer.
Senator Thompson, then when you put it in this section of law, then isn't it in a section that if you have an unsecured loan, doesn't that impact your credit rating on these industrial or whatever they call it? In this other section of law, don't those personal unsecured loans impact your credit rating?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Vandeveer, yes, but this only applies to secure loans and specifically those secured loans where there's not a personal guarantee. Did that answer your question? You're looking like maybe you didn't.
I think it may. What you're saying is the type of... Why don't you want it in the pawn shop portion? Because it seems to me that it's a transaction where you pre-sold the item and then you buy it back. That's kind of how I look at pawnbroking. And that is different than a unsecured signature loan.
I think I will let Mr. Cassidy or this gentleman, would you please identify yourself, Mr. Chairman, if that's all right?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Todd Phelps with Leonard Street and Dynard. I'm a colleague of Paul Cassidy's. There are really several reasons why this does not belong in the pawns statute. First of all, the terms of these loans are different, and portions of which would be precluded under the pawn statute. For example, just the general terms. The terms of these loans can go on for a period of a year or more. In the pawn transaction, you're talking about very short-term types of loans. And so that's just one example I can come up off the top of my head that the terms of the loans themselves are different. Second of all, the customers themselves are simply different customers. They are not customers that want to come into a pawn shop, utilize a pawn shop. These are more sophisticated customers with more complex collateral. The collateral that's involved with these types of loans is higher dollar value, requires additional underwriting, and so on. And lastly, the third reason this doesn't belong in the pawn statute is the lenders are regulated differently. There's a much higher level, sophisticated type of a lender. Additional restrictions and requirements from the Department of Commerce, those that are not required under the pawn statute. So this is really, as much as Mr. Elwood would like to make this look like a pawn transaction, they're simply not.
Mr. Chair, I have one more follow-up. It appears to me, though, aren't you taking possession of the item in this case? And to me, so you have, the lender has the item. That's a big difference from these other ones to me, and that I'm not persuaded here, so.
Does somebody want to answer that, or Mr. Phelps?
Mr. Chair, Senator Vandeveer, that's correct. In this instance, the lender is perfecting his security interest in the collateral under the Uniform Commercial Code by possession.
And Mr. Elwood.
Well, just a couple of things, Mr. Chair and members. I mean, first of all, in our proposal that I referenced before, we acknowledged that this is kind of a hybrid sort of thing, and we did cross-reference the 4759 statutes that would permit them to have the interest rates under that, but keep the transaction under the pawn shop. So we defined the loan that they're talking about. So we addressed that concern. The second issue is, this company is already licensed as an industrial loan and thrift by the Department of Commerce. So, I mean, the issue of that they have, this would have a, pawn shops have different supervisory capacity. Well, they're already an industrial loan and thrift and they're already licensed by the Department of Commerce under that statute. So.
Senator Bonoff, you had a question?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Senator Thompson or Mr. Cassidy, can you clarify for me that in the current law, as it stands, this type of collateralized loan, you can't charge storage fees? What in law prohibits your ability, if you're doing this loan, to charge storage fees? Because that seems common sense to me.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bonner, I think if you look at the original bill, I mean, there are literally three pages of allowable charges for these types of transactions, and nowhere in there do most of these fit. You can shoehorn maybe a couple in, the insurance one in particular, but the other ones we don't feel are authorized under statute. And our statutes are pretty specific as it relates to those types of charges.
Okay, Senator Dames.
Mr. Chairman and Mr. Elwood, I understand one of your concerns is this is a broad sweep. You feel it's a broad sweeping brush and that there's opportunities out there. Can you tell me, are there other organizations that you're aware of that are doing secured non-recourse loans? You're concerned about this being such a broad sweep.
Senator Dames, who are you directing the question to?
Mr. Elwood.
Mr. Elwood? Okay, Mr. Elwood.
Mr. Chair and Senator Dames, I'm not aware of others that are doing, I mean, let me say, again, I think this is essentially just a bigger pawn transaction. I mean, that's what it is. Instead of your ring, it's a boat. I mean, everything else about it is the same. You're giving the collateral to the lender who keeps it unless and until you pay back the loan. And if you don't, then they keep it and sell it. So, you know, it's just the collateral is just different, but that's the nature of this transaction. So I guess, you know, all the pawn shops doing collateralized non-recourse loans, that's what they're doing.
Mr. Chair, follow up.
Senator Dames.
Mr. Elwood, I certainly understand that the collateral, I understand the process, but I think you have to keep in mind that it's a secured non-recourse loan, and that's an animal all of its own. The other question I have, Mr. Elwood, is do you believe if with this broad sweep as you're feeling that it is, that that's going to encourage some of these other lending institutions to get into this?
Mr. Elwood?
Mr. Chair and Senator Dames, I don't know. All I'm trying to do is say that it's just sort of this odd. It's trying to put a square peg in a round hole, and I think we should just keep the banking statutes for traditional banking transactions and keep things you know, separate. But as I said, with the proposal that I have, I did recognize that there were some additional changes that probably would be required under the pawn shop statute to allow this kind of thing under that rubric. So, you know, I think the question is, if you want to accomplish the goal, there's a lot of ways to do it. And I'm not suggesting that we should not allow these kinds of loans. That's not at all what I'm saying. I'm not opposing the concept. I'm just suggesting that it would make more sense to place it where it is more appropriately belongs.
Well, I think Senator Sparson, then Pappas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And maybe Mr. Stang can help us clarify a few things. I think when we saw the original amendment was 47.59, and then that's my understanding that would include bank and credit unions. And now with the delete all amendment, we go to 47.60 and 47.601. So maybe if Mr. Stang could help myself and other members kind of understand exactly who would be included in this.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Stang.
The reference of 4760 and 47601 are exceptions to this. So this does not include payday loans in its scope. However, it does apply to all other loan transactions, not just non-recourse collateralized loans, and not just loans by industrial loans and thrifts. It would also include all loans by banks, credit unions, and so forth in the state.
Okay. Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, I think we have to be very, very careful here about any unintended consequences and that we should be as narrow as possible. Remember, it was because we had loose regulations and because banks and other lenders had loose lending practices that we ended up with our mortgage crisis. And it took us a long time to fix our statutes so that we wouldn't allow what are now called predatory loans. And so I think we need to move very cautiously. Just looking back over the last 20 years, a lot of mistakes were made, a lot of problems were created. in our economy if we aren't really careful in how we consider this. So I would just recommend we take the narrowest approach possible to accomplish the Senator Thompson's goals.
Hey, Senator Sparks, I'm sorry, I kind of cut you off.
Nope,
you had
that's
a follow
fine.
Up.
And just to kind of a follow up, and I think that that was a good point that Senator Pappas brought up, and thank you, Mr. Stank, for kind of clarifying this. And I understand that banks and credit unions do have other regulations, but I would agree that this is expanding it quite a ways. And I wonder if anyone from the Department of Commerce or if Deputy Commissioner Murphy's had a chance to look at this at all. I know it was kind of a delete all amendment, but I think that I think it would be nice to maybe hear or have them weigh in a little bit too if we could at some point, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Reich, do you want to weigh in on this if you dare?
If you dare.
By the way, it is a nice spring day, and you have an appropriate tie on today, and it was noticed by many committee members.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That credit goes to my wife. But it does help that it's lighter in the mornings when I get dressed now, so the winter's tough. Mr. Chair, Senator Sparks, I think Deputy Commissioner Murphy is aware of it. We haven't had any substantive discussions about it yet, and I'm hesitant to weigh in on what his thoughts are at this point simply because I'm not him, and he knows this stuff inside and out, as you know. So.
That's fair enough. Okay. Senator Thompson, can I ask you a question? And I will admit that I have not, although I'm aware of the issue, I have not myself delved greatly into this, but as I'm looking here, can you? I know we've been talking about the collateral, the storage expenses, dealing with the collateral, but you have that very last line, 1.9, reasonable application, underwriting, processing, and servicing fees, and I'm nervous about that, and that seems very, very open ended, and it doesn't go to the issues you've been talking about in your testimony. What is the rationale for putting that broader language in there? When that doesn't seem to get to the problem.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I can try to answer that. I think Mr. Cassidy could possibly give some more detail on that. But what you're basically looking at there is when somebody comes in to do one of these transactions, they're going to fill out some paperwork, provide some information, and the lender is going to have to evaluate the value of the asset. Now, obviously, if it's an automobile that you can look up in a blue book, that's easy. If it's perhaps a more complex asset that requires some, underwriting and those kinds of things, this is basically allows the lender to incur the cost of evaluating what might be a very complex asset. And now I'm guessing, I don't know this, but just applying basic principles of economics, if you come to me with an asset to evaluate that I know is going to cost me a lot of time, money, and effort for myself or my staff, I might not be willing to do that if I can't recoup the cost of doing that. Mr. Cassidy, anything to add to that?
Yeah. Well, Senator Thompson, isn't the transaction, I mean, can those types of costs be factored into the negotiation? You mentioned your example, here's my $2,500 boat, so I'm going to get $2,000. Well, there's $500 in theory, that if this loan is not paid back, or however, above and beyond the interest or whatever, can't that dollar amount be negotiated? Or I guess the interest rate is highly regulated.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, the usury laws would apply to that. But see, the answer is, I think you're exactly right. And if you don't get paid back, then that's factored into your collateral. But if you do get paid back, the only way that you get compensated for incurring these costs is to charge them. Pursuant to a law like this. But Mr. Cassidy, is that an accurate description of what goes on?
Yeah, right.
Mr. Chairman, yeah, Senator Mr. Thompson, Cassidy. That's correct.
Okay. Further discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Sparks and then Brown.
Kind of to your point, though, too, I mean, if these... I don't know, I guess they wouldn't be loan officers, but if these individuals are borrowing that money, I would think that they're going to be pretty careful to make sure that they're going to borrow, the loan-to-value is going to be there. So, I mean, if that $2,500 boat's there, they might not give $2,000. They might go down to $1,000 to make sure that they're going to be collateralized. And if they do have to sell that boat back, they're going to certainly make that money. So on top of that, I mean, to allow them to charge all these additional fees, I don't know. It's pretty interesting.
Okay, Senator Brown and then Bonoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Thompson, just a quick question. On line 1.7 of your amendment, fees for transporting, storing, securing, insuring, and maintaining, those sound like service fees to me. And then also on line 1.9, we include service fees again. I'm just wondering, would this allow the lender to charge service fees twice?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Brown, I don't believe so, because if you look at the list of things for which you can charge, it's a different thing. In lines 1.7 and 1.8, you can charge for transportation, storing, securing, et cetera. Line 1.9 pertains specifically to things that actually occur before the transaction happens, that are preparing for the transaction.
Thank you.
Okay, and Senator Bonoff.
Mr. Chair, I was following the thinking that you put forward, and I was asking myself the question, well, what is the business model? How do you make your money? And if you only make your money in a default situation, then that's really not a very good setup for the consumer. And so, in fact, by being able to charge the fees, it really allows for a business model whereby it's a win-win if the person does pay back the money, because then they recoup their costs, and it just seems like you might actually have a healthier business environment with the ability to recoup these fees up front, rather than just you only make your money when people default and you make more on the sale than you paid out.
Senator Russell, it sounds like you're making the counter argument to what Senator Sparks and Pappas were saying. Is it? Okay. All right, Senator Thompson.
Mr. Chairman, a couple comments. Number one, I like when I can make Democrats fight. That's good. And number two, just having fun. Number two, I am certainly willing to have a discussion with you or anyone else that has a problem with this provision in terms of when we ultimately take it to the floor, should this committee pass it out. At this point, I guess I look at this, and I'm one member who didn't accept this bill in its first iteration because I had some concern about how broad it was. I actually required, this to run through council and be restrained in its scope. So I'm certainly sensitive to all those concerns and would be willing to talk to you or anyone else about this provision in 1.9. But I don't guess I see that as particularly threatening because it's not duplicative, and it applies specifically to fees that are enumerated. To Senator Pappas' point, whether or not we disagree on the cause for the financial meltdown, and we may or we may not, that's not germane. I do agree, Senator Pappas, that we need not go off the edge and get too broad in these things. I would argue that this whole thing is about regulation and very carefully spelling out what can and by inference then cannot be charged. So I don't think that gets into the problem of what you're concerned about, because frankly, I shared your concern, which was why I needed this narrowed.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Danvier.
I just want to be sure. I think Senator Bonoff made a good point, and I caught a flash of insight maybe there as to how this could impact. Do the fees could allow enough flexibility to actually make the original purchase less risky on the part of the lender? Could it not? And so, because they reflect some of the variables like length of time that they could have it and that type of thing, am I understanding that? And is it only applicable to a pawn-type transaction, and that's why I'm confused it would be in the other part, but it's only applicable when you take possession of the property and you have it and you don't know the length of time, and then the person comes back and redeems it. Do I understand that situation?
Senator Thompson.
Well, Mr. Chairman, it's so rare we get a chance to have an economic theory discussion that I have to jump on it when I can, but Senator Vandiver, I think you're right on. I mean, the willingness of any businessman or woman to do a transaction is a function of the rate of return or potential rate of return and the risk associated with entering into that transaction. Essentially, what we've done with this statute in economics terms is we're decreasing the risk and the front side cost of the transaction. So, yes, one would assume that perhaps a borrower would be able to get more favorable terms on interest rates and those kinds of things if the lender is, for example, willing to do what's necessary to clearly evaluate the value of the collateral because they can recoup that cost, a la line 1.9. I think you're exactly right. Now, you know, as I like to say, the difference between theory and practice is that in theory there's no difference, and in practice there is. But so it doesn't always work out perfectly that way. But, yeah, economically that's true. If we can reduce the risk and clarify upfront costs on any transaction, then the required rate of return can be less because you've lowered the risk to the party in that transaction.
Senator Thompson, I'm going to suggest a couple of options that I'm just thinking, and I don't know if they're the right answer or not, but I have a little discomfort with the open-ended, you know, application underwriting processing and service fees, and we've had some talk about the broad scope on this. If you could maybe comment on two possible courses of action, maybe one amending the bill to remove those broader fees and make just the transporting, storing, you know, the costs associated with the collateral issue that you brought forward. That'd be one potential option. The other one is to limit these fees to just the collateralized non-recourse loans that you're specifically getting at. I don't think this is strictly limited to those right now. And in either case, it does address a lot of committee members' concerns about the scope of the bill. Either of those, you know, paths, I'm wondering if any committee members maybe have some thoughts on that, or maybe you could react first to that, maybe which one of those is preferable, or neither, none at all, if it detracts from what your goal is, and then we'll decide. But what's your comment on that?
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I would like to hear Mr. Stang's explanation. It has never been my intent for this bill to apply to any kind of loan other than the collateralized non-recourse loans, and I believe that that's the intent of the bill's proponents as well. So, Mr. Stang, I guess I would ask you, first off, is it accurate that in your mind this would have application beyond that? And B, if the answer is yes, could you provide some language so that we can fix that problem? Because that's not my intent.
Mr. Chair, Senator Thompson, I read this as applying to all loans, not just collateralized, non-recourse collateralized loans. If you look at page one of the bill, which is the current law statute, it talks about additional charges that may be included in the principal amount of the loan. Okay? And loan is very broadly defined elsewhere in statute, and it is not just limited to the non-recourse collateralized loans that you've been referring to.
Okay. So
the A2 amendment doesn't limit it enough.
That's correct.
So all right.
So I could suggest language to narrow down the scope of the language to that kind of loan if the committee is interested.
Yeah, I think that is everybody's intent, and that was apparently just an oversight. So if you'd be willing to suggest language that would effectuate that and that would meet the concerns of the members of the committee, I think that's a win-win.
Mr. Chairman, one idea would be on line 6 of the A2 amendment. After the word borrower, insert with respect to a non-recourse collateralized loan.
Mr. Chairman, I will.
Well, first, Senator, Mr. Stang, is that the only change?
That would be the only change I think you would need. Then these new fees could only be assessed on that kind of loan, and not the broader universe of loans allowed in the state.
Okay, Senator Thompson, your reaction to that?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I would like to move an oral amendment, and on the A2 amendment, between the word borrower and the colon, we would add the words, with respect to a non-recourse collateralized loan.
Okay.
And then the colon. Mr. Stang, is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Thompson, yes, I think that works.
I would move that oral amendment at this time.
Okay, now to that amendment. Now, Senator Dames, you asked, was it to this amendment or just to the bill after we deal with the amendment?
Well, it'll be it's to the bill.
Okay, then let's hold off on that. Do members have any comment on the particular amendment? Okay, so Senator Thompson offers his oral amendment. If members all understand that. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed say nay. And the motion prevails, and the oral amendment is adopted. Okay. Well, there's one piece. Now, Senator Dames, to the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe a comment and a concern. I don't have a problem with 1.7, 1.8 of the amendment, the fees for transporting, storing, securing, insuring, and maintaining the collateral. I do have some heartburn with reasonable application, underwriting process, and service fees. I really feel that that's part of the process of doing business. And I'm just wondering if the author would be willing to do an amendment to remove line 1.9.
Senator Thompson.
Well, Mr. Chairman and Senator Dames, I have obviously sensed that is the concern here. I guess the argument I would make in opposition to that, and I would like to hear from the proponents of the bill, is as Senator Vanderveer correctly attached on to, and I think Senator Bonhoff implied the same thing, if there's going to be a significant cost involved in, say, for example, evaluation of the worth of the collateral, the lender's going to get that back somehow. And whether it's in the form of an interest rate or whatever, I guess I, looking at it from the perspective both of consumer protection laws and from the perspective of a potential borrower, would prefer to actually know have the fee broken down and know where my money is going rather than have that, that would, for example, allow me the opportunity to bring in third-party proof of the value of the collateral and maybe save the fee. And I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Cassidy, but isn't there a requirement to disclose what the fees are applied to?
Mr. Cassidy.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Thompson, of course, these transactions are all subject to the Federal Fair Lending Practices Act, so all those transactions would be, the disclosures would be required as well.
Okay, Senator Bonhoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to echo Senator Thompson's comments because I think why I liked that is because it seems to create an environment that is less predatory, and that's also why it seems a little bit different than the pawn, keeping it just in the pawn statutes, that this actually broadens this lending to perhaps, a better relationship between the consumer and the lender.
Senator Brown.
Mr. Chair, Senator Thompson, let me know if I'm reading this correctly. Line of your amendment, lines 1.7 through 1.9, it looks to me like this will create opportunity to add 9 additional fees to a single loan. Is that correct?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Sorry, I missed that last part. Was that?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Brown, yeah, I think that's probably about right.
Okay. I missed that last comment, but further questions? Any other discussion on the bill? Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, I guess I needed to get a kind of a total picture of all the fees that are allowed now, and I'm still, that's my first question. My second question is I'm still not sure why we're in this section of law. I don't know where this bill originally came from, if Lennon Street and Dinard or from our staff, because we are talking about a pawn shop transaction. But if we're already under this section of law, are there higher interest rates that are allowed, and that's why you want to be here? And then on top of the interest rates, we're going to add all these storage fees and all these processing fees when, you know, the interest rate of, you know, 21% or 20% or whatever it is, that should be enough to, you know, in terms of your business model, that's part of the cost of doing business and not have to add additional fees and, you know, break everything down. You charge for this, you charge for this, you charge for this. So that's kind of my question is, you know, what's our whole laundry list now of fees that the consumer is going to be charged?
Senator Thompson.
I'll defer to these gentlemen.
Senator Gerlach and Senator Pappas. No, the interest rate in under 4759 is no better than the interest rate that a lender can charge, a pawn shop can charge under Minnesota Statute 325J.
And what's that interest rate, Mr. Chairman?
Senator Pappas,
21.75. I'm sorry, under which statute?
You said, Mr. Chairman?
47.5.
You said they were the same.
No, no, I said it's no better. That's what I said. It's 3% per year. 3%. Oh, let me get it so I don't miss. Senator Gerlach, Senator Pappas, under 47.59 subdivision 4B, the annual percentage rate may not exceed the equivalent of the greater of either the total of 36% per year that is part of the unpaid balances of the amount financed that is $300 or less, 21% per year on that part of the unpaid balances of the amount financed which exceeds $300 but does not exceed $1,000, and 15% per year on that part of the unpaid balances of the amount financed which exceeds $1,000. Or 19% per year on the unpaid balances of the amount financed. Senator Gerlach, if I may, we're not talking about the interest rate here, and so I don't want to go down a path. We're not asking for the interest rate to be increased. This is not about about the interest rate or what a lender can charge. What we're trying to do is recoup the costs associated with these loans. The provisions under line 1.7 are those hard costs that are out of pocket for the lender that are going to be incurred in making these loans. I understand the committee's concerns with the charges under 1.9. Senator Gerlach, those are softer costs. I understand and appreciate that, and we're certainly willing to work with you and the committee in terms of limiting the scope of those.
Okay, Senator Rest.
Mr. Chairman, I know you don't want to talk about the interest rate, but what the interest rate.
I'm sorry, Russ, could you maybe pull the microphone closer?
With the interest rate and all these fees, is it possible that just immediately the payback would be more than the loan, even if they did it within, paid it back within 2 days?
Right.
Could all these fees exceed the amount of the loan? Is that a possibility?
Well, sir, I don't know. I think that would probably enter into the calculation of a consumer or a customer that went to take out the loan. I think they would look at the cost and they would weigh that and decide whether it was worth it or not. It probably is a market control on that, I would guess. I don't know for sure, but so.
Oh, my.
Further discussion on the bill. We don't have any other amendments to offer. Senator Dames.
Mr. Chair, does this bill go to another stop before it goes to the Senate floor?
Okay. They did not. No, there's been no other requests, so this would be to the floor.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Bonoff.
Senator Thompson, listening to the interest particulars does make me rethink my opposition to Senator Dames' suggestion of deleting those additional fee lines. So that's just where, I mean, that was pretty surprising.
All right, Mr. Chairman, based upon what seems to be at this point kind of the consensus of the committee, I think it's going to create less heartburn for members if we restrict these provisions in line 1.9. So I will offer an oral amendment, and I guess I would, you know, say discussions can be ongoing, but at this point I will offer an oral amendment looking at the A2 author's amendment to simply remove line 1.9, then going back up to line 1.8, we would remove the semicolon and the word and, replace it with a period, end of quotes. And if I try to go beyond that, I'll get my grammar all messed up, so I'll ask Mr. Stang if that sounds like it accomplishes what I want to.
Senator Thompson, what I think would do, there would be some a little, to accomplish that, there would probably be some additional structural changes need to be made because you wouldn't have a breakdown of the small Roman numeral I, or I mean the small,
Exactly. So
you would make it, you would have to restructure that. But I think what we could do is we could, certainly the intent is to have just the fees for on lines 1.7 apply and not 1.9. We could give Mr. Sting those instructions. I think he'd understand and could restructure that for the engrossment.
Yeah, looking at him, Mr. Chairman, it appears to me that all we would do is with the previous oral amendment, with respect to a non-recourse collateralized loan, semicolon, we would probably pull the semicolon and just put something to the effect of including fees for transporting, storing, securing, insuring, and maintaining the collateral of the loan, period. Something along those lines. Correct, Mr. Stang?
Mr. Chairman, I'm thinking we even go before that on line 1.6 and say...
instead of the following fees, you would just spell out what they are in that line.
Fees for transporting, storing, securing, insuring, and maintaining collateral for the loan. Well, I'd probably have to – I get the idea, I think.
Glad I'm not the only one.
I think I can fix it given 5 minutes.
Let me offer this up, Senator Thompson. Your amendment could be to strike line 1.9 and give instructions to the reviser to renumber as necessary, and that thereby deleting that other number and restructure the paragraph grammatically to fit statute. Does that fit well with members, even though we don't have the exact?
I would move that at this time, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Discussion to Senator Thompson's amendment. Senator Vandeveer.
Mr. Chair, I'll be voting against this because if the fees work, then the fees work.
Other discussion? Seeing none then, members, all those in favor of the Thompson Amendment, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, say no.
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 And the amendment is adopted, prevails and is adopted. Senator Thompson, we're on the bill. Any further questions or comments from anyone? Then, Senator Thompson, do you have any concluding remarks for us?
I don't, Mr. Chair. I think it's been pretty well vetted. I would reassert my my motion. I've been pretty well vetted, too. I would reassert my motion that Senate File 1268, as amended, be passed and recommended to the Senate floor.
Okay. And if I could say, members, after we conclude this message, if you would just bear with me one moment before we adjourn the committee, I'd like to say a few comments before we leave. So Senator Thompson moves that Senate File 1268 as amended be recommended to pass and sent to general orders. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed say no. The motion prevails, and Senate File 1268 as amended is recommended to pass and sent to general orders. Thank you, Senator Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members, for your time and attention.
And members, our final committee meeting, and we end exactly at noon, which is good. But I'm going to actually just take one moment, and I just wanted to say thanks to a few folks. To the members for all of you and your participation this year. This is obviously the first time that I've been given an opportunity to captain a ship, so to speak, and chair a committee, and it's been quite an experience. And I do appreciate the having observed all of the positive things that previous chairs have done in this committee and others. In Senator Scheid, who's not with us today, but in her stewardship of the committee over the past 2 years and also serving on Senator Rest's committee. I've not served on the committee on higher education under Senator Pappas, but I'm sure it was run with equal fairness, openness, and brought good results to people. So I appreciate all the members' participation, and also to our committee administrator, Aaron Cocking, who many of you have had to go through and get some things done. He's been an enormous help in keeping the trains running, certainly the legislative assistant Rob Wills keeping all of the notes here, and also handling some bills himself that I've given to him. I won't say I pawned them on to you. So,
Mr. Chairman,
this is an arrest.
Mr. Chairman, on behalf of the Democrats on the committee, we thank you for your even-handedness and your really going out of your way to reach out to us for our participation. in the committee. It's very much appreciated, and we are very grateful.
Thank you. I also don't want to forget Chris Stang, of course, who's just demonstrated today drafting things on the fly. And although we have not dealt enormously in fiscal matters, we certainly did this year. And Mr. Mueller, appreciate your help and all of your ideas in helping us put a plan together that I think, in fact, members, as serving on the conference committee, we had put a lot more thought into our proposals than the other body, and I think I'm hopeful that we'll at least prevail on some of our new ideas and new initiatives. And also for our research folks, Brad and Jackie, thank you very much for all of your help and support to all of the members. And then lastly, of course, Bucky the Page, who is his program, well, actually his car knows exactly without him even steering how to get to Chipotle and back. You made countless runs for folks over the last few months. So thank you for your service. And I appreciate the opportunity to serve. So with that, members, committee is adjourned.